out as a subcommittee, and also on your at your place, why we the schedule through next Wednesday, and we still have the health-related licensing boards to work over. Our first education budget will be on February 26th, Community College and Workforce Development. But on these boards, we're going to do just two at a time hearings and then work on them, because I think you'll agree it didn't really work too well last time doing six of them and then coming back to work session to try to figure it out. So we will. I see we have some guests. Who are you? Welcome. Oh, boy. Okay. Honorary page. Where are you from? Where? Salem. Okay, good. Well, thank you for coming. And so we will start today. I got the right one here. No, that's Monday's.
There it is.
Okay. Board of Examiners of Licensed Dietitians. Rick, please.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I delivered to your office this morning a couple of brief memos regarding the two budgets that we'll be hearing today.
Consideration of others.
I've got extra copies if some of you need them.
I do.
The first one we're hearing today is the Board of Examiners of Licensed Dietitians.
And we will move into a full committee now that the senator from Oswego is here.
Can you put two copies down here, Rick?
Two copies down there.
Did you get copies of the memos we got today? Three.
Yeah, maybe
I think,
three.
I think there was three that I sent. Is there three there?
Senator Miller, do you have the handout that Rick...
Yes, he brought one this morning.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
Okay, proceed.
Thank you. Board of Examiners of Licensed Dietitians is a board that oversees voluntary licensing of dietitians and ensures ethical practice of licensed dietitians. This budget, governor's recommended budget, is a 5.7% increase over the current service level budget. It does include one policy option package to increase the number of board meetings from 4 to 8 per biennium and to begin a newsletter. Other than that, it continues at current service level. The board's revenue is 100% other funds from the collections of license fees. The estimated revenue for the 0103 biennium is sufficient to maintain the board operations and to continue current service level and the policy option package. We have today with us from the board, Kathleen Ellis, chair of the board, and Ann Olland, who is the executive director of the board, and Lisa Pearson from the Department of Administrative Services.
Thank you, Rick. We'll reserve our questions until we hear from the other three people. If you'd please come forward, identify yourself, and tell us what we should know.
I saw that. I don't know how to do it.
Welcome. Proceed. Whichever one of you want to go first is fine.
I'm sorry. Senator Hartung, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, my name is Ann Olland. I've had the pleasure of being the executive officer for the board of licensed dietitians for the state of Oregon. To my right, I'd like to introduce our board chair, Kathy Ellis, and who hails from Tillamook, and let her proceed with a overview of our agency's mission and goals for this biennium, this coming biennium.
Good afternoon, Senator Hartung and the Education Subcommittee. The Board of Licensed Dietitians...
Please identify yourself for the record.
Okay. And I am Kathleen Ellis. Okay. The Board of Licensed Dietitians seeks to protect the public by licensing and regulating licensed dietetic practice in Oregon. Dietitians are trained, experienced nutrition experts. Their areas of expertise include nutrition and wellness, medical nutritional therapy for nutrition-related illnesses such as hypertension, diabetes, heart disease, and kidney disease, nutrition during pregnancy and lactation, early childhood and adolescent nutrition, nutrition for senior citizens, sports nutrition, meal planning, food purchasing, and preparation for individuals, families, or groups of people, nutrition research, nutrition policy development, management of nutrition and food services. The board's long-term strategic goals for the 1999-2005 planning period include the following: identify and clarify public policy as to professional conduct and other related issues, i.e. telemedicine, one that we're looking at. Improve the Oregon citizens' awareness, access, and understanding of the benefits of the licensed dietitian to protect them from nutrition fraud. To create a strong board of examiners for licensed dietitians, educating the licensed dietitian comes under that. And promoting a stable fiscal base of revenue. Do you have any questions?
We'll hear from the other people and get back to you.
In terms of agency, Senator Hartung.
Yeah, yourself again, so
yeah.
The machine can pick it up, recognize you.
Senator Hartung, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, and all in Board of Licensed Dietitians for the State of Oregon. Agency organization, the agency was established in 1989. Right, it was a 7-member working board. Which includes 2 members of the general public. We have an attorney, and we also have a member that works with education and in a medical setting. We have 1 trained physician who is, by statute, educated in clinical nutrition, who hails from Oregon Health Sciences Center, and 4 practicing licensed dietitians who have been in practice for more than 4 years. One works with renal patients in a clinical setting. The other, sitting next to me, hails from Tillamook and is a member of the county health department. We have 1 in the industry, the Dairy Council. She's a dietitian for the Dairy Council in Oregon. And we have 1 who is the head of the nutrition department in an large HMO in Oregon. Let's see. The board, we also have 1 executive officer. I'm 0.3 FTE and responsible to responding to public and licensee inquiries, and I issue licenses, process renewals, and provide support to the board. The board responds to complaints, conducts investigations, and takes disciplinary actions. The board itself has divided itself into 3 subcommittees. We have 1, which is the administrative subcommittee, and this subcommittee addresses the education of our board members, the strategic planning, and the budget oversight. The public has members, or the public subcommittee has a duty to increase the awareness of the licensed dietitian in the state, to develop newsletters and web tools, and then again to increase the awareness of the licensing agency. And then the legislative subcommittee addresses complaints and makes reports on these complaints and reviews rules and statutes appropriate for review and or changes. The board is a voluntary licensing board, which means that they are not licensed, or dietitians are not mandated to license themselves within the state of Oregon. In order to achieve our strategic goals, the board has adopted the following initiatives: to review the administrative rules and draft rules or clarifications as appropriate, to initiate a direct mail piece to the non-members and regular newsletter
to members and targeted audiences to increase the number of board meetings. We're planning to double those board meetings and to include a strategic planning session as one of those meetings. The other is to strengthen partnerships with other licensing boards and other regulatory agencies and to identify common concerns and work towards resolutions. The other was to conduct a marketing study to determine the demographics of eligibility of eligible but non-licensed dietitians. The major program changes in the past year have included working with a shared network administrator and office location within our suite in Portland. The office has been relocated. And our last fee increase was in 1995-97, and we went to, at this point, we went to an odd number renewal year, which corresponded to the legislature biennium. This has been beneficial, or was beneficial at the time, because it allowed our licensing fees to come in at the end, at the beginning of the biennium, to allow for greater planning. The board hasn't identified any primary links to the Oregon benchmarks. Our workload, we monitor, we have performance measures, or performance indicators, but not measures at this point in time. We have 286 licensed dietitians, and the number of complaints that we've had is 5 this, during this current biennium. Cost control, we are coordinated. We do work with 7 other health-related licensing boards co-located in the same suite in Portland. Allows us to share equipment. I think you've heard this story before. One other thing I might mention is that it allows us to communicate and share project development. Being 0.3 staff, that's very beneficial to me. Let's see. We have a personal services contract for database support, this allows us to share our data with the Department of Justice, the Oregon Student Assistance Commission in an efficient manner. We share an IT position with these 7 other agencies, and that is monitored by the Board of Nursing. Information technology. We have a database which allows us to track applicants and licenses and soon complaints. And we have email communication, which allows for a quicker response from quicker response to questions that the board must address. The agency only has 1 system, NT network, Windows NT, with 1 local database. Let's see. The website, visitors can currently see on the website the rules and statutes. They can review the application that the board requires, and our consumer brochure and a newsletter is on there currently. The board has no budget-related policy legislation, and the board has been free of bias employment practices.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, my name is Lisa Pearson with the Department of Administrative Services, and you should have a document in front of you, which is our standard format. Just turn to that. Turning to page 2 of that document, this is a chart that shows over time what this agency's budget has looked like. As you can see, there's only 1 fund type. And as Mr. Olson noted, it is about a 5.7% increase from the current service level, but it is about, the governor's recommended budget is about a 9.7% decrease from the legislatively approved budget. Turning to page 3, this is rather self-explanatory. There's only 1 fund type in this agency. turn you to page 4, we actually start talking about what is in the governor's recommended budget. It maintains the current service level. It adds funding for 4 more board meetings and for 6 newsletters. Turning to page 5, we can see that the majority of the expenditures in this agency are for services and supplies, but it's fairly equally divided. Turning to page 6, we walk through how we got to the governor's recommended budget for the 2001-03 biennium. As usual, with all agencies, we started with emergency boards through fiscal 2000. This agency had one, and that was the negotiated statewide salary plan adjustment that all agencies received. Current service level adjustments include the standard personal services adjustments, standard merit increases, a phase out of technology support, staff on contract, and one-time computer expenses for this biennium. And finally, standard inflation. There is one policy package, package 141. This is the program maintenance package, and again, it would add 4 board meetings and 6 newsletters. I might also add that there are no fee increases proposed in this budget. Turning to page 7, there is one technical adjustment that has come before you, I believe, with other health-related licensing boards. This is to correct a misallocation of risk management costs in the governor's recommended budget. This would increase the expenditure limitation for this agency by $43 for a new total of $57,039. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Schrader.
I just want to congratulate the board. It's one of the few boards we've seen that actually has actually phased out technology package and not come back to redo it biennium later and get a whole bunch of new computers. You've done, believe it or not, a very outstanding job that most other boards have
Absolutely.
Had a great deal of difficulty doing.
Thank you.
Comment also. I assume that the $7,000 package 020 is the phase out of that technology support and one time.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, yes.
Other questions, comments? Senator Tro,
why do you need more board meetings?
Well, Ann Allen, executive officer for the Board of Licensed Dietitians. the board is anticipating change of board members, and it always is an educational process for new board members. The other thing that is coming into play is that the 106th Congress approved legislation in reference to nutrition, so I'd like Kathy, our board chair, to talk about that to you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Troll, I'm Kathleen Ellis. The 106th Congress approved legislation that for the first time makes dietitians eligible providers of medical nutritional therapy services in Medicare Part B. The provision limits coverage to individuals with diabetes and kidney disease and requires a physician referral. This will be a Medicare revision and enhancement package. The Health Care Financing Administration is the agency that will develop the rules to implement this medical nutritional therapy benefit so that they will decide whether it will be licensed dietitians that will be providing the service. This will be implemented. Beginning implementation will be January 2002. And there is additional legislation. Efforts are being made to allow individuals to receive through this MNT, through this Medical Nutritional Therapy Act, nutrition services regarding other diagnoses like cardiovascular disease, et cetera.
So may I assume from that that there's just simply going to be more work because of the federal legislation giving you more things to do, and the board will have to work out some of the rules and regs and standards for those things?
Quite frankly, it's been difficult having board meetings so far distant in time. So what we've done is we actually had a strategic planning session to try and figure out how we could communicate better and do a better job. And the strategic planner recommended that we would have a phone conference meeting. So that's what we're proposing, so that we would have 2 in-person board meetings and then 2 additional phone conference meetings so we could have better communication.
How many meetings will that make a year that you will have then? That when you
then it will be a total of four, two conference. I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right.
Four for the year.
Two conference calls and two in meetings when we meet all together.
What?
So it'll be eight per biennium. Oops.
Okay, eight for biennium, four per year. Okay. And you'd had just four per year before?
Four per biennium before.
Yeah. So you're doubling the number, but there's a good reason to do that. And, and having the phone meetings will be useful.
Especially for those of us that live in rural areas, it's less travel for us.
Thank you. Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the policy package 141 explained that there would be the besides the four more board meetings and says and start a newsletter. Could you describe that activity? I mean, once you start it, am I to assume you're going to send it out? Or
Yes, we will publish and distribute also this newsletter and carry it on our webpage. The activities of the newsletter, the contents will be provided by the board members. Again, I refer to our board as a working board, and then the board will facilitate publication and distribution.
And would that be, how many times would you create a newsletter, do you think?
I believe that we're talking about six newsletters per biennium.
Per biennium.
Mm-hmm. Which, again, is more work, more need for more meetings.
If I can continue, Mr. Chairman, are most of the people who receive it, do they have access to email and a website?
Not necessarily. I happen to be a dietitian that, as we speak, I'm just getting a computer installed at my desk. I've asked for 8 years, and the health department was able to finally afford it. So, no, not necessarily would everyone have access to email.
Is this that's the kind of newsletter everyone would take one, or is it something to be distributed?
Just one, yeah.
Okay.
Ann Allen, Executive Officer for the Board of Licensed Dietitians. In our application process, we're currently requesting email addresses. We're having a little bit of trouble with verification of these email addresses, but we are collecting that in the hopes that down the road, perhaps we can utilize email more efficiently. The web page also plays in there, and with the mailings, it allows us to target also. Being a public board, it's important that when there's concerns in different areas of nutrition that we target the audience, because we may want not necessarily to go to the dietitian, but out to the public when there's concerns with complaints or in the different areas.
One other question, different subject, but applies to a lot more budgets than this, and that is just a bit of a review maybe from the staff as to how we calculate the inflation adjustments.
Mr. Chair, Senator Miller. The inflation rates are standard inflation rates that are agreed upon by the Department of Administrative Services. Generally speaking, they draw in information from the Office of Economic Analysis and try to incorporate, I believe, DRI, which is a corporation that provides economic statistics information regarding what the inflation picture looks like for the two-year period that we're looking at. Then during the process of developing the budget, the allowable inflation rates are applied to the services and supplies category, the capital outlay category, and the special payments categories of expenditures.
Do you know what number we're using to make this calculation?
Mr. Chair, Senator Miller, for this agency, they don't have medical inflation such as the Department of Human Services, so the standard inflation overall is 2.5% for a biennium, a two-year period.
And in that, but it's also keyed off of not just supplies, but also services, personnel costs?
Chair, Senator Miller, yes. Actually, the inflation rate that is used to calculate the current service level is applied against all the line items you would see in services and supplies. So that would be in-state travel, out-of-state travel, all of those kinds of items. For the professional services category of expenditures, which would include professional services contracts, there is an inflation rate that an agency can apply for, which is 3.5%. And they have to apply for this and make a good case to what is frankly called the exception committee during the development of the budget. The exception committee will then review their case and determine whether or not that makes sense for that agency, or if they really should be held to that lower level of 2.5%.
Do you have any general comment on the track record of the exceptions committee? Would you say that most of the exceptions sought are granted, or...
Mr. Chair,
or
Senator Miller, this time around it was very hard to get an exception through. Most agencies...
Most agreed at 2.5.
Most agencies that didn't have a special case scenario, such as the Department of Human Services, found it very, very difficult to have an exception.
Thank you. Other questions, comments? Anybody down there? No. Representative Schrader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for the record, on B5 in our little book, it's pretty noticeable that the expenditures continually exceed the revenues, and most agencies can't operate that way. So on one hand, I was curious, but I understand you have a fairly large ending balance you're trying to work down, and I assume that's the answer, and that at some point we'll have to change that where the revenues do meet the expenditures. Is that a correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, yes. This agency, for its size, has a huge ending balance, and so they do have the leeway to not only absorb their current service level increases, but also request this $3,062 package.
One more question.
Certainly.
This relates to the performance measures. This is something new, if you will, that we're kind of trying to do at the state level, and it's not as big an impact on your board, certainly. And as you say, it's kind of tough to relate it to the benchmarks that are here. But to the extent that you could, I would ask that work with LFO and maybe the DAS people to try, in other words, this package you're requesting, it is for communication, trying to improve your mission. To the extent that you get a favorable response from us, and frankly from your membership, it'd be nice to show that, geez, if we do this, we expect to have better results with infant mortality because we're really getting the dietary information out. We know that it's not all our little board that's going to be able to do that because we're hoping the big DHS department does too. But if you can relate something along those lines, that would be very helpful. And if that's not the appropriate one, pick something you feel you would have a more major impact on, and then that would be helpful in the future too.
Curious.
Certainly.
A non-budget question.
Absolutely. Any question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious what you're saying about this new federal law for the medical nutrition therapy. Can you just tell me, is that going to include vitamin therapy?
No, Chair and Representative Close, this is Kathleen Ellis. My understanding is that it will provide funding through HIPAA will determine from Medicare just for nutrition counseling, assessment and counseling by the dietitian, whether it's going to be registered dietitian or licensed dietitian, for the two diagnoses, diabetes and kidney disease at this time.
But would those would the therapy include, is it only food therapy or is it vitamins therapy as well?
Yes, dietitians, it's beyond their scope of practice to be recommending any first medications, but any vitamins beyond 100% of the percent daily value is considered a drug, and so then they would have to be under the umbrella of the physician for that patient.
Thank you.
Fine. Any other comments, questions? If not, we will close the public hearing on the Board of Examiners of Licensed Dietitians and open the public hearing on the Board of Examiners of Nursing Home Administrators. Rick, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I delivered to your offices a memo regarding this board this morning. Board of Examiners, Nursing Home Administrators, again, is a continued or current service level budget. They are asking for no packages, no enhancements to this board. They have one FTE. The board develops and enforces standards of practice for nursing home administrators. The board consists of 9 members appointed by the governor. The board is anticipating a fee increase during the 2001-03 biennium that is not, there's some confusion on the way that fees have been increased and or are going to be increased. Some of you are aware of Senate Bill 333 from 2 sessions ago that requires any fee increases approved administratively by the Department of Administrative Services and through administrative rules to come back to the legislature at the following session to be ratified. This governor's recommended budget, even though it is a current service level, does anticipate a fee increase during the 2001-03 biennium. And so if this budget is approved at this current service level, in essence, what you would be doing is telling the board, yes, you go out and raise your fees, but then they would be required to come back at the next legislative session to have those fees ratified. So we will certainly get into some discussion on that during their presentation and during the work session on Monday. We have with us from the board Catherine Gustafson, who is the chair of the board, Barbara Razio, who is the executive director, and Satisha Padier, who from the Department of Administrative Services.
All right, thank you, Rick. Whoever wants to start first, please identify yourself and proceed.
I'm Catherine Gustafson. I'm the chairperson of the Board of Nursing Home Administrators. Chairman, Senator Hartung, and members of the committee. I'll just briefly tell you a little bit about our board. We meet 4 times a year. We're made up of 3 administrators, 2 public members, 1 physician, 1 pharmacist, and 1 registered nurse. We oversee the licensing, the best practice, and the investigation and discipline of nursing home administrators in Oregon. We also oversee, evaluate, and approve training programs for interested licensees in the field of nursing home administration. Barbara Arazio is, I'd like to introduce her. She's our executive director of the Board of Examiners, and she's our only employee.
Good afternoon, Senator Hartung and members of the committee. My name is Barbara Arazio. I'm the executive officer of the Nursing Home Administrator Board. I've been with the board since 1984, and I know the workings of the board inside and out, but frankly, facing you, my mind kind of turns to mush, so please forgive me if I skip around a little bit. Catherine mentioned the board's activity as far as administrators and training. That, frankly, is a large part of what we do. Almost every other board that licenses people, they come into the when they're licensed, they've already gone to a special school, usually gotten a special degree, in order to practice their profession. We have people who are coming into the field who may have gone to college and may be fresh out of school and have degrees in healthcare administration. But we also have people who are coming into the field who may have been a teacher, who may have been in the ministry, who may have been an accountant, who are also coming into the field. And when they do, they must complete a 960-hour administrator and training program in a nursing home. There are domains of practice which have been developed by the National Association, and those cover practically everything you can think of, from working in the kitchen to doing medical records, budgeting, payroll, hiring, firing, every aspect of the long-term care, what a nursing home administrator has to learn to do. And they do that for approximately 6 months. If they're doing the program full time. About halfway through that training program, they meet with the board. And the board just asks them questions about what they've done in their training, what they plan to do, specific questions about issues that face nursing home administrators, such as abuse and psychotropic drugs and staffing problems, and whether or not they've experienced a survey. And then after that interview, a letter is sent to the preceptor, and the preceptor is a nursing home administrator who's gone through some training in order to train others. And there are recommendations that are given to the administrator in training and the preceptor, and then they come back to the board at the end of their training period prior to taking the examination to see if they followed up on those recommendations. I will point out that in the 97-99 biennium, we had 56 administrators in training, and to date, we have only had 19 that have come before the board. So nationwide, there has been a decline in the number of people who want to become nursing home administrators, and it's a real concern to the National Association because it affects their revenue, I think. The board has sought information about electronic commerce, and I guess when I was looking at the price list, when I was putting the budget together, I thought this cost is a little bit high. But the board would be very much interested in it once everything has been worked out. And I know there's an emphasis on electronic commerce by the legislature this year, because we did do a survey a year or two ago, and approximately 30% of the licensees would be very interested in paying, I think, their renewals or application fees via a credit card. We have been doing biennial renewals. It was approved by the 1993 legislature. We purchased a computer at the end of June of 97. We are not going to be purchasing a new one. I haven't had a lot of time to do training, so I don't think I'm using that computer to its maximum capacity. So when they tell me I'm running out of memory or whatever that is, I guess I'll get another one. There has been a switch by the National Association from a paper pencil national examination to a computer-based examination. That means that their application still has to be approved by our board, but they don't have to come to Portland to take the exam. They take it through a Sylvan Technology Center, I think is the title. And right now there's only three of those in Oregon. There's one in Eugene, there's one in Milwaukee, and there's one in Portland. And we've been having some revenue problems because of when you don't have AITs registering, you don't have initial licenses being issued, and then you don't have people renewing their licenses. And we have 449 licensees, and that number has stayed basically the same since I've been with the board for the past 16 years. And where was I going with this? I'm sorry. So they're not taking the examinations. California also licenses nursing home administrators, and they go through basically the same process. But for some reason, they cannot process applications for the computer-based exam. So they asked other neighboring boards if they would be willing to do that for them. So what they do is their AITs complete the program, they submit an application to the California board, the California board sends them a letter, they send a copy of the letter to me, then they call me and ask for a packet, I get the packet with the fee, and then I forward the fees onto the testing service. Well, we keep part of the fee, and then they take the exam in California once they get an authorization letter from the testing service. So, you know, God bless California, because they have basically saved our bacon because of the revenue that it has produced for us. And you know, I'm very pleased to do it for them, and I think they're very pleased to have me doing it, and I hope to continue to do it until the end of the biennium, when all boards throughout the entire country have to send their licensing fees directly to the testing service. We will no longer have an exam fee.
That's true. Yes, Senator Stroh. Question, what do you use the revenue for that you get in that fashion?
Senator Hartung, Senator Stroh, we use it to operate the board.
I see. So
that is our main
you supplement your fee revenue with that revenue, is that it, so that you can operate the board?
Senator Trout, you mean the California revenue?
California.
Yes, it's just like they were Oregon examinees, but they're from California. So there's no difference in the revenue. Yes, we just, it's part of our operating expenses.
But obviously, we approve a budget, and we approve revenue that you get in fees.
Right.
Is that considered other funds in your budget, then, the revenues that you make by doing that?
Oh, yes, we are. It's other funds, and it's considered examination fees.
Okay. And so it's part of your examination
right.
fee
That's right.
category?
Right.
Okay.
I mean, it's the only difference is they're from California.
And what percentage, how much money do you make doing that?
Well, we charge $200, and the exam service charges us $125.
So you make the difference.
But for Oregon applicants, when they pay $200, they take a state exam as well. For California, of course, they don't want to be licensed in Oregon at this point, so they're only taking the national exam. But the fee is the same. If an Oregon applicant pays $200, they take the national and the state exam, and they fail the national exam, they still pay a $200 fee.
If you didn't do that activity, because that must take some of your time and energy to do that, if you didn't do that, would you have to raise the fees that you charge for the exams or for otherwise to make up for the loss of that money?
If we were not, well, because we have had so few administrators in training this year, I foresaw a revenue decline back in March. So there's not a lot of cutting that you can do in a small agency budget. So I cut myself by 20%. And I just went back to full-time in January because those California fees at least had given us enough revenue that I think I can get by in the next 6 months.
Sure. So you need to do that work, basically, to keep the operation going?
Well, definitely.
Okay.
If I, Senator Schroe, if I hadn't had California, I think I would have had to close the office 2 days a week.
Thank you.
Do you have other questions or comments?
Just Representative. Just if I may, I don't mean this in an other way other than just I'm kind of curious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, times have changed and things have moved on, and it sounds like that with less applicants, I'm wondering, you know, the industry isn't changing, though. There's a lot of other community-based alternatives mm-hmm. besides nursing homes. And colleges have sprung up and maybe are, like you say, teaching or offering degrees or coursework in this area. Is given the fact that there are more regulations, it's a tougher environment, is it appropriate for the board to continue to do the administrator training? Has there been any thought to the fact that maybe this is something that should be done through an academic institution and that those guys take the risk? It shouldn't be something the board and the actual members should have to deal with. In other words, is this something that has been any discussion about phasing out this aspect of what the board has done heretofore now that it's the new millennium, a lot more regulations, a lot tougher to do it in-house, and maybe it should be done by an academic institution?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Schroeder, the administrator and training program is no cost to the board because it's done in nursing homes by other nursing home administrators.
Sure.
So then, I guess, what is the, why does the board have any input into this at all? What is the role of the board? Why do you need revenues? Why do you have why does the money go through you to be taken care of by the nursing homes, if you will?
I'm not quite sure I understand your question.
If all the training's done, maybe I'm not understanding either, but if all the training's done at the expense of and in the nursing homes themselves, then what role do you have in the training process?
We provide the domains of practice, basically the framework of the training plan in which the training occurs. Are you saying perhaps that they could just do on-the-job training themselves and then not have it go through the board at all?
Well, I guess that would be, Mr. Chair, that would be one alternative. And then the other alternative is that the nursing homes aren't allowed to hire anybody unless they've had a college degree and, you know, some sort of nursing or business training. If the industry has gotten sophisticated enough and tough enough that those people really have to be pretty on the ball, maybe it's time that type of licensing go on as opposed to the other.
Did you want to address that, Kathy?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schroeder. I think your point is well taken. I think people could easily, look at it like another job, walk into, get on the job training. I do think that being a nursing home administrator and a nurse and having spent a great deal of my life in the long-term care industry, even with the best training program, we have a fairly high rate of exiting the industry. I think having a mentor and somebody overseeing and giving them some idea of what is actually going to happen when they take on that type of a role is helpful. It was helpful to me when I started. And we offer our services as a mentor after hours and ask them to come into our facilities and help them with areas that they may be having trouble with in the administrative program, something I don't think they would get in a college setting. So I do think there's a big value in that, and I think it's, for me and a lot of our board members, that's one of the best parts of the board, is that we get to see the new people coming in and give them suggestions on areas that they want to look at and what's happening in the industry. And I do think that there's a benefit to the people coming in to have a specialized training program. But it also, you know, could be done somewhere else, just like anything could be.
Sure. Certainly. Just to follow up and then another out-of-the-box type question, if I may. It'd be interesting to see the breakout of how much of your time and what dollars that are coming in through the licensing and applications go towards that part of your function. That would be interesting, I think, for us to look at as a committee. The other question I have is, there seems to be a lot of several different agencies, if you will, that deal with nursing homes. One mm-hmm. is yours, via the administrator's end. The other would be the long-term care ombudsman. You know, they deal with, you know, a lot of the care there. And then the third would be SDSD.
Mm-hmm.
Has there been any discussion among the three different agencies about rolling this together a little bit so that we don't have actually three different agencies dealing with nursing homes? We only have one or two.
Mr. Chair and Representative Schrader, I think that would be ideal, but it's not evidently an ideal situation at this point in that everybody seems to be approaching it in a different mm-hmm. way at this moment. We're really interested in the administrator, how they're administrating in an ethical, legal fashion. We don't focus on what is happening necessarily in the facility unless we get a referral of something that may need to be investigated. The Ombudsman Office certainly is the ombudsman to the residents, and their interest is not so much in the administrator either as what's going on in the facility itself, which obviously relates to the administrator. And SCSD is a regulatory agency, which we really aren't. It would be great if we could work together, and we do refer and talk back and forth, but we don't have any kind of a formal situation at this point, and we deal with one thing together. When we investigate issues, we bring representatives from SDSDN and the Ombudsman Office if it's appropriate for the situation. So we do have some exchange on what we do. We don't always agree, but we have exchange.
Representative Schrader, I just might add that, in fact, one of our public members is an ombudsman. She was recently appointed.
Okay, Satish, would you please?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
Excuse me just a second. Senator Trow.
Yes, and perhaps get an explanation. But as I look at your budget for last session, it's several thousand dollars more than it is for this session, right? And yet at the same time, you said last time during this 1999-2001 when you had more money, that you almost closed the board down because you didn't have enough resources and you had to supplement your income by doing this work for California. How are you going to get along on less money this time?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, our budget is less because the cost of paying for the national examinations is being taken out of the budget.
So that explains the reduction.
Right.
Otherwise, it's current service level,
mm-hmm.
and it's just that money that's removed.
That's right. There's also, I think, some IT money that was in there last time that was overstated in the previous budget, so that's been removed also.
You have some fee increases in the budget. Do you want to tell us why those are there?
Senator Trow, I have fee increases because I do not foresee that with the reduction in the number of licensees and the stable license base that we have, that at the with the present fees, that we can continue to operate.
So it's just you just need the money so that you can operate.
That's right.
When did you last increase these fees?
The last fees that were increased were in the 1993 legislature when we went to a biennial license. We were going to increase the fees, I think, for renewal to $50. But because it went to a two-year license, it then became $300. So it was $300 every 2 years. We haven't increased the initial license fee for probably 15 years or more.
That's right.
That's right.
Is there any opposition within the nursing home administrators to the increase in the fees?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, we sent a newsletter out in April 2000 that basically broke down what the fees, what we projected the fees would be, and what the fees, an explanation of how they would be applied. And we had no comments from anyone. In fact, I asked in the newsletter, if you have any innovative ideas about different ways to do this, please let me know. And I didn't have any responses.
Do you know whether these fees are out of line with what other states have as licensing fees?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, I do know that Washington charges, I think, over $200 for a one-year license. And I have a book of all the nursing home administrator boards around the country, and I've looked at those. But many of those states, particularly Florida, Texas, Ohio, they have thousands of administrators that they license, so they can keep their fees very low. If I had, you know, you give me a couple of hundred more people, and I can keep my fees low, too.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and Senator Trowman.
Sure.
I'm a licensed administrator in other states in this area, and it is well within the parameters of what I'm paying in other states.
Yeah. You think people think that it's worth it to pay this fee to be licensed?
I hope so. I do.
May I make one comment, please? Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, one of the fees that we are proposing is a reactivation fee, which means if they've been unlicensed, their license has lapsed, and they want to be relicensed again. Instead of retaking the examination, they would just pay a fee to do that. And I happened to talk to a gentleman yesterday who had a nursing home administrator for about 9 years, and she retired. He hired someone else, and she was there for 3 years, and she had to have a double hip replacement, so she's not going to be coming back anytime soon. So he has asked his former administrator to come in. She's 67 years old. She is deathly afraid of taking that exam again. And I told him, I said, if the fee is approved, you would have to pay this reactivation fee. And he says, that would be a blessing. He said, I'd be more than happy to do it, and Jesse would be delighted. So, you know, it's in this way, too, the National Association doesn't get the exam fee. They are going to be in a position of calling the shots on those exam fees from now on. They're going to be setting those fees, not me. So if I can help those administrators save some money, why not?
Well, I think one of the purposes of examining people is to make sure you've got good, competent people who can
That's
do the
right.
job.
That's right.
You don't want to lower your standard.
No, but these people have been previously licensed, so.
Do you think they're okay?
Mr. Chair and Senator Trow, we do also have continuing education, and the people that relicense also are required to meet the
right.
standards.
Okay. Thank you. Satish.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, this is Satish Upadhyay of the Department of Administrative Services, and I'm here to talk to you about the governor's budget for the Board of Examiners of Nursing Home Administrators. And you should have a copy of my presentation document in front of you. If you turn to page 2, you can see that the recommended budget consists of $179,074. Other funds, this is a 6.9% decrease from the 9901 legislatively approved budget. This decrease is because of current service level adjustments that you just heard about. And this budget maintains agency operations at current service level. Now, if you will, page 3 is self-explanatory. It just talks about that this agency just have one kind of fund type. So if we go to page 6, and page 6 shows that 68% of the agency budget consists of personal services, and 32% consists of services and supplies. I would now like to tell you how the budget was developed. The starting point was the 9901 legislatively adopted budget. This consisted of $188,242. Then there was one emergency board action that applied to all state agencies relating to employee compensation cost increase. So that led to an addition of $4,069. And there were several current service level budget adjustments. These included adjustments for positions and inflationary cost changes. This is for just like for other agencies. And there was a phase out of services and supplies cost relating to examination fees. That's one reason for the decrease. Now, the National Association of Boards of Examiners of Long-Term Care Administrators requires that examination fees be paid directly to them by the applicants. Currently, it is flowing through this board. Thirdly, there was adjustment of information system support costs. They were over budgeted last biennium, so there's a reduction because of that. That's how we came up with the current service level budget. Although there's a policy package mentioned here, after consultations with LFO, it turned out that this agency does not need a policy package for fee increases because it's just related to revenues. So the governor's recommended budget is basically the current service level budget for this board.
Sure.
Lastly,
yes, Senator Cho.
Yeah. Did I understand you that there would not then be fee increases in the budget?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trull, there would be fee increases in the last biennium. There will be fee increases in the next biennium, but they will not need any additional expenditure limitation. As a result, this policy package does not need to be here.
Okay.
The board will increase the fees administratively. Then during next session, they will come and present to you to meet the requirements of Senate Bill 333. And this budget include some fee increases. This is more of fee restructuring than increases because you'll see that there are several fee increases and there's elimination of the national examination fee and there are also addition of new fee categories. Lastly, there is one technical adjustment that you heard about just in the earlier presentation too. This is adjustment of risk management charges. So we will need to increase the governor's recommended budget by $143 to meet that adjustment.
Question, Mr. Chair. With regard to the with the new fee changes, there's a pretty healthy fee balance of 15 months anticipated. That seems a little high.
Mr. Chair, Revenue Administrator, we've just realized that the revenues have been overstated in the ABIS documents.
So what is the, if I may, Mr. Chair, what's the anticipated ending balance then?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, we are waiting to get some more accurate numbers regarding the revenue, anticipated revenue, other than those that are in the ABIS document. I will have those for you by Monday before we go into work session on this. But I am anticipating right now it's going to be approximately an 11-month ending balance.
Okay. Well, I guess I'd like LFO and DAS to work on that a little bit. That also seems a little high, and so to the extent that we can get the board where they need to be and yet keep that in balance, you know, the 3 to 6 month range that we shoot for, taking into account the highs and lows so that the board's fully covered, I'd appreciate that.
We'll do that.
That's true.
Yes, sir. Well,
I just recall the discussion, and you said that if you hadn't supplemented your income, you were going to have to close the office for some days because you didn't have enough operating money. So
Mr.
how
Chair.
Do we have such a big ending balance and not have any operating money?
Proceed.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tro, I will tell you that I don't understand ending balances. I will tell you that I look at cash balances.
Uh-huh.
And I've been looking at my cash balances. I do that from the beginning of the biennium.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at how my cash comes in and how my cash goes out.
Mm-hmm.
And my ending balance as of, well, I don't have the one for January because we don't get that till the end of February.
Mm-hmm.
But for December, it was $57,969.
Mm-hmm.
And the end of the biennium is June 30th. Now, my renewal cycle, since I have 2-year renewals, I don't get my renewals will start coming in April, May, June, or May, June, July.
Sounds like what you have is a cash flow problem. Is that it? More than...
It is more difficult to have a cash flow, you know, more even when you're doing it every 2 years.
Yeah. All right.
So, excuse mm-hmm. me for just a second. It's just that I get a little bit nervous. Mm-hmm. I kind of calculate how much I'm going to need for each year, part of the year, and if I'm spending too much the first part of the biennium and I see how much I'm going to have for the second half, I start making cuts.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, like I say, there's not a lot of room to maneuver.
Mm-hmm. Satish, can you explain that?
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Tru, for Monday, we will provide you with a new revenue figure.
Okay.
And also, the board can increase the fees administratively. They just need approval from the Department of Administrative Services,
mm-hmm.
and we will work with them to make sure that their revenues, the increase in fees.
Okay. But they have a big ending balance that you can see.
Yes. Uh-huh.
At the same time, they have trouble with cash flow so that they think they can't operate month to month because of that.
Yes, Senator. That's very good.
It seems a little strange.
Right, it does. And Satish, when you come with those figures, and Rick, I'm very curious to know how you overstate a balance, and I hope it's just not creative accounting that you're going to give us.
Mr. Chair, we're going to get to the bottom of it, I can assure you.
Okay, thank you.
I do want to make one comment, though. I have in front of me a cash flow graph or table here for the biennium to date. And this shows that they actually started out this biennium with a $100,000 balance. But that is somewhat misleading, because as we go through, and as Ms. Orazio has said, they renew once every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And those renewal fees come in May, June, started April, but mostly May and June, just prior to the new beginning biennium starting. So that's why you're seeing a $100,000 beginning balance. And as I look through this with anticipated expenditures for the next 4 months through April, they're actually in April going to have a cash balance of somewhere between $20,000 and $25,000. So if you look at that as a low point,
mm-hmm.
their low point ending low point balance is about a 3 to 4 month
yeah.
ending balance.
Sounds
and
better than
and then they'll be getting their renewals out and their revenue in May and June, which will bump that cash balance or beginning balance back up to start the next biennium. So when you look at these figures, you've got to take that into consideration as well. But we'll have that laid out for you by Monday, and you'll be able to see it.
Thank you, Satish. Do you have anything else?
I got it.
Okay. Either one of you ladies have anything else we should know? Any other questions or comments from the members? Any other business? If not, we are adjourned.